This is WOWDLP, Tacoma Park.
Freedom, 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 freedom. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. It's a long way from my home.
Good morning, everyone. We hope you're having a great start to your day. We hope you can get you juiced as we talk about art every other Saturday morning. And this is Tom Xenakis, and I'm with Sheila Blake, and we are the hosts of the Art as Experience radio show.
For additional information about the program, we have an Art as Experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're talking about. It's also a place where we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback. Please look at it if you can while you're listening. For additional information about the program, see my website, SheilaBlake.com, ArtisExperience.com, and on iTunes.
Well, good morning. Sheila and I are excited for a lot of reasons this morning. Firstly, it's our 100th show.
Yay!
Here on WOW
Great.
Tacoma Radio. We've been here since the beginning, and we want to thank our leaders at the station, Marika, Olivia, Steve, for having the faith in us to provide a unique kind of programming in the Artist Experience radio show. We want to thank our dear Bobby Hill, our friend and engineer, for being with us from the beginning as well. Bobby has been the backbone of our program and support for our show, and he is someone that has taught us so much about radio. Sheila and I came into not knowing a thing about public radio. Is that correct, Sheila?
Nothing.
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 And we thank the leadership at the station for allowing us this opportunity.
We also want to thank Peter Blake, my husband, who has subbed many times and helped us prepare so much about making this show, and for his welcome participation on air, especially with the COVID-19 restrictions for the recording in our dining room, where we are now. And we need to thank our son-in-law, Dan, for his recording and engineering expertise to turn our shows into real professional deal since September 2020. We must thank our special guests in the community that have joined us at the station. We thank them for their generous time and contributions to our program. And lastly, we need to thank you, our listeners. Without your ears and your interest, we would not be doing this. We know, and yes, we surely know, people listen to this program coming in from all over the globe. Our listeners do this with dedication. Just like so many programs here at WOWD Tacoma Radio, we have a dedicated following. Your community radio station right here in Tacoma Park is a global community radio station. We thank you with all our hearts and your listening, your generous contributions and donations to this station.
Okay, Sheila, well, let's pop the cork and celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. I like that champagne.
How's it taste?
It tastes great.
We do another 100 shows in health and happiness and learning. And of course, we're only kidding. We're not popping the cork. We're doing a radio show. We also are excited to share a show in honor of Black History Month. Today, we want to highlight monuments and art of African Americans here in Washington and beyond. Monuments honoring Black Americans that have contributed so much to the fabric of America and the artists that made these artworks and monuments.
Well, I want to start by saying, just personally, that I knew a stone carver here named Cy Gresser, who never stopped carving. He was chipping away at his stones until 3 weeks before he died, which was about 5 years ago. And I'm lucky enough to have five of his sculptures in my yard. And they are really heavy. And he was just this one guy who had to acquire the stones and move them around. He sold many of his works, but when he died, he had 140 sculptures littered over his backyard. Stone carvers are a rare bunch. They're usually trained in Italy or England. The main work here for stone carvers has been at the National Cathedral, and even though there was an argument for the Martin Luther King Memorial to be made by an African-American artist, which makes sense, the Monument Committee chose a Chinese artist that they felt could handle the job. Because it's a huge scope, and because this Chinese artist, had done other large-scale works, they had to play it safe. It's a catch-22, because how would one artist get that kind of experience? We'll never know if this was the greatest choice. I'm going to contrast three wonderful memorials in Washington. I'm going to start by talking about the Martin Luther King Memorial on the Mall that was made by the Chinese sculptor Li Yichin. There are good things and bad things about that choice, including the decision to carve Dr. King out of white granite.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a good point.
It is. Thank you. Again. The gigantic monument to Martin Luther King is on its own path on a line right on the tidal basin looking across the water to the Jefferson Memorial. And it looks down to the Washington Monument and next to the FDR Memorial. So the quote that this memorial was conceived as is, "Out of the mountain of despair, a stone of hope." From the I Have a Dream speech in Washington on August 28, 1963. And that serves as a theme for the overall design, which realizes the metaphorical mountain and the stone. Behind the actual figure are two mountainous lumps of granite, the same stone that the monument is carved out of, and it looks as if it was slid out of a large opening in between the stones, a huge figure of Dr. King. He is much less naturalistic than the Civil War soldiers, but if you look way up past his body and his giant hands holding a scroll, his face is kindly but stern. He was carved in China, and it looks to me that there is a robust kind of simplicity of the communist era. Simplified cuts that take the light and shadow in sharp contrast, and looking up 30 feet to his head, the features, the eyes, the broad chest, the formal clothes, they also look more militaristic, but also kind. It was very controversial who would get that commission, but they went with safety. What they didn't figure on, though, is how communist Chinese this whole thing looks. It's imposing, all right, and the way that he is standing so that the 3-inch cuts into his clothing defining him catch the shadow and make it clear in the sunlight. But he looks more Asian than African American, his eyes, his broad chest, his military pose. At the same time, it is a thrill to look up 30 feet to his enormous head.
Well, Sheila, thanks for mentioning that. That comes across very quickly.
It does.
It has very kind of Asian features in that. And but what to me, what kind of really, this sculpture is all about power. Mm-hmm. There's an incredible power in that figure standing there, and that kind of cloaks it, because it's all about the power, and not only the power of the visual, but the power of the word that goes with it.
Well, it's interesting because when I was just writing this script, my friend Sharon, who is African American, called me, and I said, and she called to talk about Black History Month, and I asked her what she thought of the memorial and did she think it was Asian, and she said a lot of African Americans have an Asian sort of shape to their eyes.
Physiognomy in the eyes.
Yes.
Huh?
But the granite walls that are surrounding this, the walkway that enclose the statue, are carved in the familiar King quotes. And the familiarity of these quotes don't at all dilute their force. They are brilliant, they're inspiring, and at least as much so as when I first heard these words. I wanted every single person in this country to be there with me and read them with me. It is thrilling.
It's a great contrast of power from the sculptural power of the visual and then the word, the powerful words. That actually
absolutely
really choked me up a lot.
Yeah.
Upon that. I mean, it really gets to you. And it's that kind of, kind of vibration between the word and the visual that makes it really, that whole memorial is powerful in that sense alone.
It is. It really, you understand the greatness of this man. He was a true leader. The earliest quote is from 1955, spoken during the time of the Montgomery bus boycott. And the latest is from a sermon that King delivered at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., 4 days before he was assassinated. The quotes are not arranged in chronological order so that no visitor must follow a set path to read these quotations, instead being able to start reading at any point he or she might choose, because the main theme of the memorial is linked to King's famous I Have a Dream speech. None of the quotations on the inscription wall come from that speech. Originally, the quote from Dr. King for the statue is, "If you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for justice. Say that I was a drum major for peace. I was a drum major for righteousness, and all of those other shallow things will not matter." The memorial's use of the paraphrased version of the quote was, "I was a drum major for justice, peace, and righteousness." It was paraphrased from that longer quote, and when they delivered the memorial, people were incensed because it gave the wrong idea of who Dr. King was and what he was really saying. So the whole thing was removed.
Oh, wow, I didn't know about that.
Uh-huh. But the lettering on the polished granite walls was done by Nicholas Waits Benson. He's a third-generation American stone carver, stone letterer. He developed an original font that draws on both classical Greek letter forms and contemporary sans-serif lettering for the Martin Luther King Memorial on the National Mall. And it was given careful attention to the light and the shadow and the effects of long-term weathering that the weathering has on the letters, as well as carefully crafting small details of each letter. He says, "The entire composition is key, but the proportion of the letter, the design of the particular letter form itself, is extremely important too. Equally important is the cadence of the text, how the negative space is used, word spacing, line spacing. All of that is absolutely crucial to good inscriptional carving." And that is so true when you're reading that. You're not aware of the letter forms, but your eyes flow and take it in instantly.
It's so well designed. And I think for our listeners, you know, every little single aspect of the kind of letter and possibly the punctuation is all designed. And, you know, it's working with stone, so it has to be, you know, right on, or else you start all over.
Yes. So, Tom, I just wanted to say, what in your mind is the difference between a sculpture and a monument?
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I think a monument in itself has an integral place in a landscape, where a sculpture doesn't necessarily have to have that. It's an integral part of the architecture and also the environment and the space. Sculpture has those, you know, issues as well, but I think we're talking on a larger scale. And not to mention a monument could have a historical theme, you know, and more contemporary theme, which a sculpture can have also, but it's a dedication.
That's a good point.
It's a dedication.
Dedication.
to a person or an event, things like that in historical terms, which we'll talk about one.
Yeah. And the purpose is to move many people. And that's what this monument does.
Oh, it absolutely does.
Yes.
I mean, there's no doubt about that. It actually is one of my favorite monuments in Washington. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to the Artist Experience radio program here at WOWD Tacoma Radio, 94.3 FM. Yes, the Artist Experience radio program is here for its 100th show. We are discussing today, in honor of Black History Month, monuments and sculptures that beautifully depict the African-American experience and contributions by African-Americans into the cultural milieu of America. Sheila and I have chosen to pick works made and designed by African-American artists as well. Well, I kind of researched this, Sheila, and I was kind of a little perplexed. Before the construction of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, dedicated in 2011, Jacqueline Trescott wrote in the Washington Post, and I quote, "In a city crowded with memorials and monuments, few represent the individual struggles of African American pioneers or salute the contributions of Black citizens." Well, I kind of said, well, let me research this a little. The piece of writing is a simple, sad truth. There are about 25 to 30 monuments and sculptures dedicated to African Americans for public display in D.C. Many of them, although beautiful, were not made by African-American artists. So I wanted to dig deeper into that. And the most famous and the most celebrated are, of course, the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. The sculpture is powerful and it's in a beautiful setting, as we just spoke about. And the design group was interesting, but there was an African-American on staff in that design group, you know, effort. Mr. Purnell. And then, of course, there's the beautiful and sensitive Mary McLeod Bethune Memorial by Robert Burks, a life-size sculpture in Lincoln Park as a tribute to the educator, philanthropist, and statesman. Another great, you know, Washington monument. The Shaw Memorial by Augustus St. Gaudens, the great American sculptor and artist, dedicated to the American Civil War soldier Robert Gould Shaw, killed at the assault of Fort Wagner in South Carolina on July 20th, 1863. Well, the fact of the matter is that Robert Gould Shaw was white, but he volunteered to command the all-black 54th Massachusetts Infantry in the Civil War. He came from a family of staunch Northern abolitionists. His reputation inspired many African Americans to enlist in the U.S. Army of the Union to fight, and this monument is a dedication to the brave African Americans that died in his unit and the other African American units that many men perished during the Civil War. These beautiful monuments are especially important, but today I wanted to highlight art that was commissioned for Americans that were made by African American artists. So I want to talk about the one that exists, a wonderful sculpture that exists in the U.S. Capitol, and it's the bust of Sojourner Truth. She was the first female African-American to be honored at the U.S. Capitol. The story of her life is remarkable. She was born Isabella Bounfrey in 1797 in upstate New York. Her parents were both slaves. She grew up speaking Dutch. That really was something I found very interesting. She was speaking Dutch, and she was a slave at the age of 9. By age 30, she had 5 slave owners. In 1827, with a daughter and a son who was sold illegally to a Southern slave owner, she became free and had a profound religious experience and became a devout Christian. In 1843, she changed her name to Sojourner Truth and began to preach about abolition and women's rights. She is known to profess, and she said this in her journeys, "The Spirit calls me and I must go." Her memoir, published in 1850, titled A Narrative of Sojourner Truth, A Northern Slave, was a monumental and timely work. She spoke at the first Women's Rights Convention in Massachusetts. And then in 1950, She became a celebrated speaker of not only women's rights, but the rights of Black women and her experience that were possibly different from white women. She was popular in Ohio, New York, Michigan, and she was instrumental in getting Black populations to these areas to enlist soldiers for the cause during the Civil War. And then she came to work in D.C., which I thought was fascinating, at the Freedman's Hospital. And she was instrumental in desegregation of the streetcar in D.C., and she died in Battle Creek, Michigan in 1883. That woman's life was just amazing. I learned so much about her. The artist who sculpted her work has also another fascinating story. This is the Canadian African-American art. Excuse me, I take it back. This is the Canadian African artist, Artist Lane. She's now based in California, and this artist has worked on a variety of commissions from ceramic molds. Her most famous work is the portrait of Rosa Parks in the National Portrait Gallery, and also the Rosa Parks Congressional Medal of Honor. The artist was born in 1927 in a community in Ontario, Canada, of descendants of slaves who migrated to Canada and the Underground Railroad. Her work concerns the spiritual wellness of humanity that connects humans with a universal force. She has completed many sculptures of prominent Americans, both Black and white. The bust of Sojourner Truth is a strong, larger-than-life bust of a proud and effervescent woman. And again, the first Black woman to be honored at the U.S. Capitol. It's an extraordinary, strong woman that's depicted. And there's also a suggestion of the words of truth that she speaks. And I think it's really, there's something very simple about it and a very alive portrait, I must admit, in sculpture. And if you ever have a chance to see it, I would suggest you do at the U.S. Capitol.
Great. Thanks, Tom. And we want to thank you, our listeners, for your recent contributions and donations as it was Wowdy Week at the station. As you all know, Tacoma Radio is doing this 24/7 with refreshing and award-winning programming. Wowdy is worth it. We are growing together. It's power, people. People power. How's that? Your tax-deductible donations to pay our bills and keep us growing and evolving, just like what we are talking about today in our Artist Experience radio program. Go to our website at tacomaradio.org. And to donate, if you missed out on the fund drive, it is never too late, and we thank you for your generous support.
It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. So I don't know what's up there. Telling me don't hang around. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Yes,
welcome back. If you just joined us, you are listening to Artist Experience Radio program here at WOWD Tacoma Radio 94.3 FM. Yes, the Artist Experience Radio program is back on WOWD Tacoma Radio.
For our 100th show.
Our 100th show. It's amazing. We are discussing today, in honor of Black History Month, monuments and sculptures that beautifully depict the African American experience and contributions by African Americans into the cultural milieu of America.
One of my favorite memorials in all of D.C. is the African American Civil War Memorial, with its sculptural titled The Spirit of Freedom. It exists on Vermont Avenue off of Florida Avenue Northwest in the complex of the U Street Cardoza station served by the Yellow and Green Lines. That neighborhood has been hopping for years, and it's in a really lovely spot. I always enjoyed this sculpture, dedicated in July of 1998. The work recognized the 209,145 of the United States Colored Troops, as they were called then. It is the African American soldiers that fought in the Civil War. Additionally, this monument honors 20,000 unsegregated Black Navy sailors as well, in addition to Hispanic and mixed race soldiers that died and served. I think this is important in this city for all the U.S. to see. It is important, and it's so important that the management is now under the National Park Service. The only time I really learned about African-American soldiers that served and died valiantly in the Civil War, and this was the first time, was in 1988. Could you believe that, Sheila? It's the first time I really realized this.
Well,
as I mentioned before, this prominence became knowledgeable by the movie called Glory, and this highlighted the 54th Massachusetts Infantry. It introduced us to the wonderful actor Denzel Washington, who has gone on to such great theatrical and movie and TV heights. Morgan Freeman, of course, a great actor, and then Matthew Broderick stars in the movie as well. Broderick is playing the killed leader of the 54th Massachusetts Infantry, Robert Gould Shaw. And it's amazing how he looked like him, too.
That's really?
I found very peculiar, really looked like him. Many of those who fought and died in the 54th Massachusetts Infantry served and received medals of valentry and honor. It is known that, sadly, there were many heavy losses of those brave soldiers that died in this noble cause of freedom. When the rebel states refused to rejoin the Union early in the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation and created a number of regiments in the Union Army and Navy filled with Black soldiers. This memorial in Washington, D.C. honors these units, who faced particularly viciousness from the opposing army and discrimination of forms in their own army. So more than 200,000 Black Americans filled the 175 regiments of the United States Colored Troops, which was also called USCT, approximately one-tenth of the Union forces. That's amazing. I find that truly amazing. It was largely through the persistence of the African-American and Black American communities that Union policy on Black military service changed. Eventually, the 180,000 Black soldiers who served, including the 98,500 formerly enslaved men, provided a crucial service to the Union Army. Their names and those of their white officers are inscribed on the Wall of Honor at the African American Civil War Memorial. This is the first memorial dedicated solely to those troops.
Thanks. I'm going to also talk about this memorial. When we moved to Washington, which was 1988, we brought a row house in the Howard Shaw neighborhood that had been devastated by the 1968 riots. They were slowly building the metro, and our city council member, Frank Smith, was staking his reputation on a Black Civil War memorial at Shaw Cardozo Metro stop, even before the metro was even built. The neighborhood is being rebuilt now, and once again, it's hanging on a thread because of COVID. In fact, the gallery I'm a member of is right there. And among the mostly closed restaurants and the 930 Club, which anchors the recently vibrant area, I'm just hoping that this all comes back after COVID. And Frank Smith's project is now a reality. When it first got put there, before they had really done the whole plaza, there was just this bronze sculpture, and it's life size, and it seemed so small to me. I thought, what? We waited for this, and it's this tiny sculpture? But now that it's enclosed with the walls of honor and the whole plaza, it's very wonderful.
Oh, it's absolutely a nicely placed right there.
Right, it is. And so this was commissioned. It's a statue in the round, and it was commissioned by the D.C. Commission of the Arts and Humanities in 1993. It was made by the African-American artist and sculptor Ed Hamilton, who works out of Louisville, Kentucky. Ed Hamilton was born in 1947 in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I'm going to tell you a bit about him, but first I want to say that when he was commissioned to build this statue, it's called the Spirit of Freedom, and it features Black servicemen from the Army and Navy in the front, as well as in the back, there's another soldier and his family that are sort of being enclosed, so you have to walk around the back, and then above, the Spirit of Freedom's face watches over them. There's also a African-American Civil War museum that's right across the street. And at the museum, visitors can dress in period uniforms. They can look up their ancestors in the USCT, which is the colored troops, and they can register as descendants and study photographs and documents connected to the USCT. So the sculptor, Ed Hamilton, was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, and he was raised in Louisville by Amy Jane Camp and Edward Norton Hamilton Sr. After high school, he had no real thoughts about going to college, but his teacher made sure that he would go. And in 1965, he received a scholarship to Louisville's Art Center, where he studied sculpture and painting. He graduated from the Louisville School of Art in 1969 and started his teaching career at high school. So he was originally a painter, but he had seen a sculpture by Barney Bright, a Louisville sculptor, and he was responsible for the river horse statue right on the river in Louisville, and that changed Hamilton's life. While he was teaching ceramics in high school, he went to buy clay for his class, and he saw that Barney Bright's studio was right next door, and he was dying to meet him because he had been so moved by his sculpture.
You talk about a fortuitous event that changes your life.
Oh my gosh, really? But he had already been in love with the sculpture, so that was even more so great. But he was too shy to go knock on the door, and he sat in his car. He was quite a shy guy, and he was trying to get up his nerve, and then he sort of thought, well, I'll just go, and he was starting to drive away, and Barney Bright came out to get his mail.
I think this is such a great
story. So great, and Ed found himself propelled out of his car to go introduce himself, and Bright made Hamilton his apprentice for 8 years. When he saw him, he said, sure, come on in. And he gave him a place to work and the opportunity to learn sculpting and casting. So on December 16th, 2004, Hamilton received a Doctor of Arts honorary degree from the University of Louisville. And 2 days later, he received an honorary Doctor of Arts degree from Western Kentucky University. In 2006, Hamilton self-published an autobiography, The Birth of an Artist, A Journey of Discovery, in which he talked about his work and his creative process. The book was a popular feature of the Kentucky Book Fair in 2007. While working on the book, Hamilton, at age 57, discovered that he was adopted. His mother was sick in the hospital, his mother that raised him, and he was looking for some of the things that she needed in the hospital, and he came across a black purse that was under her mattress, and it had his adoption papers folded inside.
Wow, unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Later on, he found his birth mother, and she had always dreamed of meeting her son. And he connected with his siblings and his newly found family. His birth mother was a Mary Kay salesperson, and she had gone to a convention in Detroit. And outside of that convention center at the Joe Louis Stadium was a bronze statue that was made by her son.
Oh, you know, this is really a very moving
it really
part
is.
Of his life, and you know, for everyone to just. That she's standing in front of his sculpture at
not,
the convention.
Not realizing that it was made by her son. It is so great. He had worked on memorial statues of Abraham Lincoln at Waterfront Park in Louisville, Kentucky, Booker T. Washington, Joe Louis, and the L. Amistad Memorial in City Hall in New Haven, Connecticut. And he continues to work now in his Kentucky studio.
Well, one of the great things about doing this show is you find these anecdotal things about artists' lives, and it just makes for the humanity of creativity. It brings it all together in such a warm way.
Yes.
And I really have to say that it's always interesting researching this, and I learned so much about our next artist. One of the most celebrated artists of these traditional works by African-American artists, Ed Dwight. He is an American sculptor, author, and test pilot for the United States Air Force's bust of Frederick Douglass. Exists at the National Historic Site of Frederick Douglass in Anacostia, Southeast D.C., and that was his first sculptural commission. So he's come a long way because he's done a lot of noteworthy monuments and memorials since. Later in his career, he completed another sculpture, which is at Union Station, of the celebrated civil rights labor unionist and politician A. Philip Randolph. A. Philip Randolph was born in Crescent City, Florida in 1889. His family soon moved to Jacksonville, Florida. His father was a tailor and a minister, and his mother a seamstress. His parents were staunch defenders of equality in Jacksonville, and they raised two sons that had outstanding academics, and their work in high school and college were very much upstanding in the community. A. Philip Randolph's life changed when he read W.E.B. Du Bois' The Souls of Black Folk, and his path was paved to fight for social equality. In 1911, Randolph enrolled in City College, and that was definitely like Harvard at that time in 1911. And there he married met Howard University graduate Lucille Campbell Green. In Harlem, he was responsible for organizing the arts, and even he wanted to be an actor. But the culture and verve of the Harlem Renaissance was just about to explode in the 1920s, and his parents actually didn't think it was a good idea. I had to put that in. His interest is in socialism and Marxist ideology began his ascent into labor organizing and politics. He was always outspoken, and his political beliefs were sometimes counter to the conservative African-American communities he served, and they felt he was digressing from his African Methodist Episcopal roots. And there was often a criticism of his detractors that he was getting away from those roots. Although branded at times an atheist, he was instrumental in organizing peaceful prayer protests, and which were an important strategy for the civil rights movement. A. Philip Randolph is appropriately placed in Union Station, because as early as 1925, he organized and led the Brotherhood of Sleep Car Porters, the first predominantly African-American labor union. Mm. He was a voice not to be silenced by both Presidents Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Harry S. Truman. He was definitely out there and upfront about what he had to say about what was going on with racial inequity in labor. And A. Philip Randolph worked to end segregation in the armed forces and discrimination that existed in the defense industries during World War II. Randolph was influential in establishing economic advice and recommendations to economically disadvantaged people in the black community. He was an important part of the civil rights movements as early as 1941, and he died in Manhattan in 1979. The parallel life of A. Philip Randolph is with the artist Ed Dwight, with amazing similarities in their life, but they lived 50 years apart. Our artist, Ed Dwight, too, was very academically gifted. As a young man, he read and he heard about segregation in the Air Force, and he was determined to break the racial divide in that part of the military. He was the first African-American to graduate from his Catholic high school, and he went on to be a member of the National Honor Society, and I think that was in Kansas City. And then he graduated from the reputable Kansas City Art Institute and Community College. In 1953, he enlisted in the U.S. Air Force. In 1961, he was selected as the first African-American astronaut trainee. He received much attention in the U.S. for this honor, but in 1966, sadly, he felt a victim of systemic racism at NASA, and he resigned. Ed Dwight was a mover and shaker, and he would not be denied. He was an engineer, a real estate man. He worked for IBM. He was a restaurateur. He had a construction company. Mm. And he had all these jobs, and all the time he was making sculpture. I don't know how one does that.
Wow.
I do not know how somebody could do all these things so well, too. In addition to his degree in aeronautical engineering, he received a Master's of Fine Arts in Sculpture for the University of Denver. He was responsible for the university's metal casting foundry. And I don't know if any of you listeners have ever had foundry. Well, I did in high school. And that's a mix of engineering and art. Mm-hmm. Working in a foundry is, well, it's a lost art for sure, but it's tough. Not to mention there's a lot of heat going around in the foundry. Ed Dwight works primarily on African-American activists and important black historical figures from the emancipation to post-Reconstruction. The African-American frontier and jazz musicians are also things that interested the artist Ed Dwight. He maintains, and get this, Sheila, a 25,000 square foot studio foundry and gallery in Denver. That's huge. His engineering skills and sense of invention and innovation have made him a very successful artist, and he continues to produce works and commissions nationally.
I feel like we should applaud him right now.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
It's great. Thank you, Tom. So I'm going to talk about Martin Puryear. And I also want to say that we did one of our very first shows on the American African-American sculptor Martin Puryear. And I thought 100 shows later, it would be great to revisit his work.
Totally appropriate.
Perfect. And it's perfect for today, for this show today. I also want to contrast his work because the African-American Civil War monument is very naturalistic. And when you are walking around that monument, you can look up into the faces of the soldiers, and each one is really individual, a young man. There's an old man carrying a rifle. You feel as if you can speak to them. Martin Puryear is the opposite kind of sculptor. He uses very simplified forms, but he derives these forms from different periods of art, especially African art. And yet, when you really look at them, these forms are also very moving in a different way.
Oh, he's very conceptual.
Very conceptual.
Artist, and very brilliant.
What a man. What a man. He was born in 1940, and he's internationally known, and he's created many gallery-sized sculptures as well as huge monuments. I love this man, even though I've never met him. His work is so individual. It's not abstract and it's not representational, but it's a blend of the two that somehow carries great import, even though his works are very simplified. Puryear was born in Washington, D.C., and he went to Catholic University. And then he went to West Africa in the Peace Corps, where he learned all of the native crafts. He learned about boat building and basket making. And he really can make anything he wants to. He returned to the U.S. and he went to Yale Graduate School, which was then, and maybe it still is, the premier art graduate school in the country. But it's at this time, at that time, it was also subject to the turns of style with the turnover of the faculty. And at the time he went there, there were two things going on, very current kind of styles, and one was minimalist. And the other was conceptualism. And the conceptual artists didn't really make things. They just thought. And they planned. And they wrote. And they were the white-collar artists. There was also minimalism, which very simplified things. And Puryear kept doing what he already knew to do, which was working, making things. And his studio was like in a dungeon because the architects replaced the sculptors. And so he finished school, came out still making things as a blue-collar artist. He actually loved building. And he also had lived in Sweden. And now he got to go regularly to New York. So he wasn't a modeler. He was a builder. He loved assembling parts. He still thinks like that, even though now he has the help of assistants and a digital technology outfit, which enables him to build huge monumental sculptures. I love that when he talks about his work, he's completely open about his methods and the help he gets. And not every macho sculptor is like that. So I think it's great that he talks about the outfits that really help him now. His forms are derived from boats, from slave ships, from African masks, from animals. They're often curved forms with aspects of cowering forms or forms in chains, but much more evocative in their simplification. There's a feeling in their presence that evokes emotion and story, but it defies definition. One of his sculptures is called Bearing Witness, and it is in the plaza next to the Reagan International Trade Center. Martin Puryear's Bearing Witness is a colossal sculpture of hammer-formed and welded bronze. It is a simplified form of an elongated head, but tilted back from the floor so that it has a precariousness. Seen from the front, there are no features, but the hammered surfaces allows your eyes to investigate what would be a face.
Well, I think, Sheila, the thing about this work, which is an amazing work, mm-hmm. is when simplicity equals like intelligence. In an art form, it's a very intelligent art form,
yes.
And I'm not going to use the word clever. It's better than that, you know.
Yes.
It's something that that sometimes we think simplicity is kind of a bad thing, but here it turns it into power and brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where he really shines.
Oh, boy. Well, at Brown University, Ruth Simmons, who is president of Brown University, and she is an African-American woman, she decided to research the Brown family's past, and he learned that much of the fortune of the Brown family was from transatlantic slave trade, which dominated every aspect of the life in Providence, Rhode Island. There weren't farms, but there was a port, and the slave voyages, legal and illegal, dominated the economy. So Puryear was commissioned to build a memorial. This is what you're saying, Tom. This is when it really gets brilliant. It's a partially buried sphere, and which is like the buried shameful truth of the slave trade. It's made of cast iron, and it's meant to rust and take on the patina of age. The tops of the broken links of a chain that comes out of one side of the sphere are made of polished metal that reflects the sky. So you can think about these broken links, and at the top of the broken links are reflecting a sky, which gives a sort of optimism to the work. Another of Puryear's sculptures was commissioned by New York City to pay homage to Manhattan, and he named it Bling. It's interesting. It's made of wood. It originally was not meant to last. It's a 40-foot high form, somewhat animal-like, like a cat, like closely an Egyptian cat of maybe 600 BC, or perhaps the form of a crouching person. It's built out of wood with the help of digital technology, and it has a shackle, a device that's made of fiberglass and coated in gold leaf. And this is sort of at the nose, what would be maybe the nose of this creature. And it's paying attention to New York City, the city of bling, and that's why it's gold. It was built out of plywood and put in Madison Square Park for a few months, but it was standing strong, and Philadelphia wanted it. So they moved it to Philadelphia, and in that location, it took on a completely different meaning. And now it's in North Adams, Massachusetts, close to Massmoka, and it's looking out over the Berkshires, and that's a beautiful sight. What a difference the location makes. It takes on a completely different meaning in each of these places. I didn't want to leave this discussion without mentioning Martin Puryear's most iconic and maybe everyone's favorite piece of his, Ladder for Booker T. It's a ladder made out of white ash, and it begins just a little above the ground, and it twists up and upward and diminishing. He used the perspective of diminishing proportions so that the ladder begins at the width of 11.5 inches at the bottom, and it rises 36 feet to 1.25 inches. So it seems to reach the sky. It is so simple, and it, like his other work, so beautifully crafted that it just stays in my heart forever. And there are a lot of people that feel this way.
Oh, that's an amazing piece of work.
It's
there is no
beautiful.
Doubt about that. You know, there's an allusion to, you know, Jacob's ladder as well, in
yes.
a biblical sense. Wow. Thank you for that, Sheila. Well, this is our 100th show, and I was reflecting upon working on the script and how much this radio program has taught me about art and culture. Although I teach at university, there's always so much to learn about other artists and other people engaged in our communities. Just as my students inform me so much about life and art, this radio station is a great place to learn and investigate things on a variety of topics. Think about what we were sharing today. This program and this radio station are unique listening experiences. You will not find this program, Artist Experience, anywhere else, like WOWD WCLP, your community radio station. We like to be one of a kind. If you have not had time to donate, look at our website, tacomaradio.org, and click the donate button. Make a monthly gift to fit your monthly budget. We thank you for your tax-deductible donations. It means a lot, and you mean a lot to us, our listeners. I'm really excited about the next shows coming up, Sheila. What do we got coming up on the pike here?
Well, we have two ideas for shows, and we can't tell you right now, depending on our whim. One of the shows we want to do is continue on our on artists who were also did other things in their life, like Tony Bennett, George W. Bush, Bob Dylan, and Andy Warhol, all people who did, who excelled in other things and also in art.
Right. They cross-pollinated the art genres. Yes, we're looking forward to that. And what about that other show?
The show that we really want to do, Artists and Their Mistresses. There are many artists that found their muse and more with their mistresses, George Seurat, Pierre Bonnard, Lucian Freud, Francis Bacon, and Modigliani are just a few of them. And so we're looking forward to researching this.
Yes, that'll be one exciting show. Oh, Sheila, well, thank you for that. And we look forward to our upcoming events. And that that show should be quite a steamy one. We might need that in this cold winter here months
Good
ahead.
Good idea.
Well, stay tuned for our next exciting programming at WOWD Tacoma Radio, right here at 94.3 on your FM dial. Please join us with Bobby Hill and Clay Fink and this music coming up. Their incredible knowledge and musical depth on their programs on every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Avant-Garde Jazz is right here, and keep that dial fixed for Bobby and Clay to take over your jazzy vibe this Saturday afternoon. We invite you to listen to every other Saturday between 8 and 9 to Robin's Radio. It's an opportunity to listen to radio of our youth, and it'll bring out the child in everyone. Lady Murr and Milo are hosting Borderlines from Wednesday to 10 a.m. to noon. Listen to this interesting selection of music variety. Listen every other Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. for our friend Gail Behrens and the Night Ride Home. Gail serves up an eclectic and selective mix of songs from a host of musical genres. We invite you to go to our website, tacomaradio.org, and look at the program schedule. There's so much fantastic music, talk shows, interviews, and community news from so many diverse people at this radio station and from our communities. Please go online and see the programming. Experience art and the visual in everything you do. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. I wish I could.
like I'm lost.